You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Yeah, everybody, give it up for our panelists as they take over. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ade, for that warm welcome. I'm not actually from CCLA. I'm Jesse from Finance Innovation Lab, which is a charity campaigning to make the government change the rules in the financial system so that it could really work for people and planet. And I'm really excited to be here to talk to you all about my favorite topic, which is pensions. Yeah, your favorite topic too. I knew it would be. And that's why we have so many people here. Not for any other reasons. For this exciting and important discussion about how we can save our retirements. We've got a really exciting panel who I'll introduce in a moment. But first, let me just say a few words about why this is so important. So we know that the pension system briefly has two parts to it. First, there's the state pension, which has actually got quite a lot better in recent years, even though it's not as good as many other European countries. The triple lock means it is getting better and improving. And we're not going to focus so much on that today. We're going to focus on the other part of the pension system, the private pension system, or the part that you pay into through your work. And this is huge. So the UK's private pension system holds around £3 trillion in assets, according to the government. And it's supposed to supply us all with a dignified and secure retirement, along with the state pension. It should also help support a healthy economy. And of course, it's vitally important for the future of our planet because of the investments that it makes. And unfortunately, in each of those three areas, it's currently failing very badly. So, in terms of decent, secure retirements, it's incredibly unequal, the private pension system. So the bottom half of the population has just 1% of all pension assets, while the top 10% have over two-thirds. So most people are simply not saving enough to have a decent or secure retirement. Secondly, it's not supporting the economy as well as it should do, and there's been a long-term decline in how much pension assets invest in the UK. And finally, it's also financing environmental destruction. So we know from research from Make My Money Matter that there's £88 billion invested in fossil fuel companies in our pension system and over £300 billion in deforestation companies linked to deforestation. So there's huge problems in our pension system, but this can change. And in fact, it's very likely to change because the government is undertaking the biggest review of the pension system for 20 years. And it's just established a commission with very long-term and serious aims. So it's really looking at how to fix the system, the underlying system, for the long term. So we have a huge opportunity to influence that and to get the government to change the rules, to make the system do what we need it to do. And in this review, the government has said they will tackle the inequality problem, and they've said they will tackle the UK investment problem, but they haven't said anything about the environmental problem. And so there's a huge job for all of us to do to make them take that seriously and make that integral to the biggest reform of pensions in our lifetime. So, having said that, I'd like to introduce our excellent panel who's going to help us think about how we can make the government do that, and how to grapple with this incredibly important issue and hopefully fire you all up to get active and do something about it, which I'm sure many of you are already doing. So first we'll have Tessa Younger from CCLA Investment Management, who you've just already heard helps to sponsor this, where she helps charities and public bodies use their investments to influence companies on climate and nature. Then actually, let's have a round of applause for Tessa. Thank you. Then we'll have Andrew Finney from Fossil Free Oxfordshire, who's been working towards eliminating fossil fuel investments from government, local government pensions in Oxfordshire and the Southwest for the last 10 years. Round of applause for Andrew. And then we'll hear from Phoebe Edmonds, who is the outgoing movement organiser for the Student Christian Movement and the director of Grapevine Theatre CIC, and in both roles has been running campaigns focused on divestment. So let's hear it for Phoebe. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions to each panelist to get the discussion started, and then I'm going to hand it over to you for the bulk of the time to ask all those things you've always wanted to ask about pensions, or to say those things you've always wanted to say to a large and appreciative audience. So we're coming to you soon. So Tessa, thanks so much for being here. I guess the first question is, why should the government care about climate when it's trying to fix the pension system?
Well, thanks, Jesse, and it's great to be here. And I think you really set it up brilliantly. You know, here's in 20 years, first time in 20 years, we're having this big pensions review. Two issues are looking at pensions inequality, looking at investment in the UK. But where's the third leg of the stool? Is that huge area missing that it's ignored climate? And I'm aware we've got 5 minutes each to speak, so I've got my phone open in front of me. So why should the government care? Well, I think we're all aware of the effect it's having on communities. I heard Tessa Khan speak earlier about how we've seen this happen in the UK, certainly in the US, in California with the wildfires, Florida with hurricanes and floods. You're now seeing people that can't get insurance on their properties. That means they can't get a mortgage on their properties. That means they can't sort of participate in the financial system and sort of live a life as we'd want to. And also in those states, the insurance premiums have skyrocketed. But it's not just the US, it's elsewhere. The head of Allianz in Europe, one of the big insurance companies, has said, you know, the temperatures we're heading up for, if it gets up to 3 degrees, they're not going to be able to provide insurance for mortgages or for businesses. And that means our whole financial system has no stability at all. And the final point I'd say on that is all the scenarios that financial analysts use to plan what's happening with investments and how they're viewing them in terms of temperature rise, the scenarios, they completely ignore tipping points. It's something I think, Andrew, you were going to mention. The Institute and Faculty of Actuaries have flagged this, Carbon Tracker have flagged this, that when you have a tipping point like tundra melting and methane issuing or sea level rise, none of these are baked into the scenarios, and you're going to have totally different financial outcomes. So we don't want to dwell too long on the problem. That's, you know, we're all aware of what that is and the particular impacts for the financial sector. But where can we start looking at solutions? And the great thing about pensions is the pension horizon aligns with the problem to be dealt with. It can take the sort of medium to long-term view and take account of these things. And finally, I'd say, you know, it's very clear that research shows that people care about these issues. We survey our clients every 3 years. The number one sustainability issue is always climate risk. And a group called More in Common have done one very recently for the UK as a whole. And again, they want these issues, they want these long-term issues taken into account, as long as there's the right balance of risk and reward. So, you know, we need to see climate change baked into pensions reform.
Thanks, Tessa. That's really clear. I mean, yes, it's pretty terrifying, isn't it, that despite the massive damage that you're saying this will do to the financial system, pensions funds and others are not yet taking it seriously enough. But there are many that are, including yourselves. But what would you say the kind of things that we as citizens might be able to do to influence this critical reform process?
So I was thinking, what can I say to the audience to do? I think first we want to be aware what the government can do in this whole reform process.
Right.
So I think one of the things is to support pension fund trustees in their decisions, require more reporting from fund managers. It's something we take very seriously in our engagement with companies. We're very clear on how we're trying to get them to decarbonise. And I think then for the pension funds themselves, also to support more, the government to support engagement with members. So ask the members what their concerns are. And the funds, likewise, the transparency from fund managers to the pension funds, they should be passing on that information to their members. So you know how your money is being managed, how climate risks are being taken into account, how companies and assets are trying to be influenced. So I think I'd say, you all have agency. Think what you can do in all aspects of your investments, whether it's banks or ISIS or your workplace pension fund. And where you can, engage in the process. Engage with your fund and money managers. And then also get involved in the debate when the commission comes out. At some point, I imagine it'll be doing a consultation. Anybody can respond to these consultations. Speak to your MP, get them to input in the process. I was saying earlier I shouldn't be too much of a social activist because I'm here as the fund manager and representing pensions. But, you know, raise awareness, write to your newspaper, you know, amplify it on social media. You'll know where you're comfortable with taking action. I think there's so many courses to do, and just be engaged and informed. And I think the fact that you're attending this session today shows you're well on the way to that.
Thanks so much, Tessa. And we'll come back to that, what we can all do, I guess, in the discussion. But if I could move on to you now, Andrew. And I've actually heard you say that climate change is a financial issue and doesn't actually really need to be thought about as an ethical issue or framed as an ethical issue. Can you explain why you think that?
So what that orientation is about is about asking the financial industry to basically do their job properly under their own, or what should be their own definition of what's good, rather than framing it as, oh, there's something else that you need to do which is ethical and it's a bit different. It's about getting them to take an appropriate time horizon, because a lot of the time it's like limited to 10 to 15 years. And it's also about kind of making them realize that the risks that they have in their actual portfolios are mostly focused on systematic risk, because most modern portfolios are very, very highly diversified. So they are effectively investing virtually in everything that's possible to invest in to try and even out all the risk. But that leaves systematic risk, which such as climate change, and they need to, and that leaves that climate change as the most significant risk that they face. So they should be addressing that risk as their highest priority. Instead, when you bring it up, often they'll just say, well, that's, we don't do ethics, we don't do ethical investment. But actually what they should be doing, if they're doing their job properly, is actually making that the highest priority, because effectively they're kind of using a computer to do the rest of the stuff. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think it's clear to me, since I've been working on this for the last few years, that actually if you think longer term, the biggest threat to our pension investments will be unchecked climate change and nature destruction. So if we don't integrate that, then it doesn't make any sense, does it? And if you could, are we talking about what the government should be doing, is ultimately responsible for how the system works. If you could choose one or maximum two things, top demands that you'd like the government to do, what would they be?
So there's, if it's all right, I'll go for two. There are a couple of amendments that have been raised by Share Action and your good selves at Finance Innovation Lab. The Share Action Amendment is to revise the definition of fiduciary duty. And fiduciary duty is basically the rules around about what you can do in a pension scheme. And the problem is the current definition is really not orientated around addressing systematic risk properly. And it kind of really confusing. And it, more importantly, it becomes a sort of get-out clause for a lot of trustees not to really face the issues. Because they can kind of say, well, okay, it's not that, you know, climate change isn't about the immediate sort of financial gain of the pension, so I'm not going to think about it. Go away. And actually, if the definition of fiduciary duty changed, then the trustees could even be compelled to address systematic risk.
Popular point.
And the second one, the demand you're making to the government is basically to start the ball rolling with some exclusions of fossil fuels, starting with thermal coal, which, you know, there's no real investment in thermal coal in this country anymore, so there's no real issue. And it's quite clearly from the science of it, it's absolutely appalling what it's doing to the environment. So, yeah, thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Andrew. Yeah, absolutely. Great points. Agree with those. Make pension funds trustees realise their duty is to society and the environment, not just for financial returns. And let's start getting the government to phase out fossil fuels from pension fund investments. Phoebe. if I could come to you. So why do you think young people should be particularly concerned about this issue?
It's a really good question, because when I tell people that I'm going to be on a panel about pensions, or that I'm writing a campaign about pensions, they go, you're 23. And people see it as an issue for older generations. But the reality is, the sooner in your life that you notice pensions can be an activist issue, and you can make sure your pension is divested into an ethical area, the longer your money is going to be in those ethical areas, as opposed to into kind of fossil fuels, arms trade, stuff like that. So the younger you are, the more time you have to research where your pension will be going when you enter the workplace. Or if you've just got into the workplace, you can look and you can say, actually, my money isn't going to where I want my money to go. I was quite naive about pensions. I thought that you gave a company a bit of your money, they held on to it, you retired, and they gave it back. And I thought that was the process. But it's not. They take your money and they invest it in so many places that you might disagree with. And that's your money. And therefore, you should have a say in where it's going. I mean, thank you. So I know that Make Money Matter have said that for every £10 you put into your pension, £2 of that is going to deforestation. And the reason this is such a core issue for young people is because this is our future. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's everyone's future. But there's a strong point for young people to see pensions not as a pot of money to access when you're old, but a key point that you can be an activist through. And I hope that talking on this panel, the youths in the room will agree with me by the end.
Well, that's a good point, Phoebe, because you've got a whole panel, a whole audience full of young people. So, well, the lights maybe up there, it looks like that from here. What do you think they can do about this?
So there's various things that young people can do. And if you don't consider yourself a young person, I'm sure you know young people. So, you know, repeat what I say. But there's various things that young people can do. The first is, a lot of young people are linked to institutions like universities. Those universities will have pensions for their staff. That's one place you can try and make a difference. Just because you haven't got your own pension yet doesn't mean you're not connected to institutions that do. Another example would be your local council. They also have pensions that you can write to, and you can ask, where are their investments going? And if they're going places that you don't agree with, you have a voice to say, actually, there's better places that money can be going. For example, Liverpool Council uses the Merseyside Pension Fund, and this fund invests £11 billion of its finance, and over £80 million is into 32 firms supplying Israeli military, either directly or indirectly. This is just 0.8% of their total investments. So you have a voice with your councils to say, your money and my council tax is going towards this, and therefore I want to see a change. And because I'm a young person and this is my future, I want my voice to be heard in this discussion. So you have your own institutions. Thank you. So you've got your universities, your schools, your councils, those institutions. You've also got time. You have time to research pensions, learn how they work, so that when you enter that workplace, you don't feel disenfranchised by not having the knowledge. You can go in, you know what you're talking about, and maybe after you've settled in a little bit, I don't know, you might want to make a stir as soon as you get there. But you can mobilize your other colleagues, and you can say, this is where our company is sending money through our pensions. Let's get together and let's demand a change, because I've educated myself now. And we can do it, and we can make sure our money is going to decent places.
Brilliant. Thanks, Phoebe. That's a good rallying cry to all the youngsters in the room. Now it's over to you, and we should have two roving microphones. So I'm going to take four questions and then come back to the panel. I'm going to take two from over here and two from over there. So if we have one mic over here and one mic over there, I'll take the first question. Where's the microphone there? Yeah. Can we have the one with the cap? Some person with a cap just here, please. And over here. Can we have all the hands over here? Let's see how many hands we've got. Too many hands to count. Gentleman down here. sitting cross-legged, making me feel envious. I can't sit cross-legged. And then I'll come back for the second when we've got the mics. So what's your question, please? Could you say your name and your question? If you can try and keep it short. If you want to make a statement and a question, that's fine. Just also keep it short.
Hi, I'm Debbie. I consider myself a young person. I'm self-employed and I run my own small sole trader business. I'm starting to think seriously about a personal pension. What would be your advice for someone who's self-employed who really doesn't know where to start with all of this?
Great question. Self-employed people are very badly treated by the current system, so that's a good question. We'll come back to the panel on that. Second question.
Stephen, this is a question for Andrew. Given everything you've said about the systemic climate change risk, when pension trustees disinvest from fossil fuel companies, armaments companies, etc., to whom are they selling their shares? Because I'm just wondering who's on the other side of the deal. Who is the dumb money who's buying these assets, which have got a very limited shelf life?
Thank you very much, Stephen. And I'll take one more question from over here. Kind of right at the front here, making it happen with the glasses. And then one more question from over here. So straight there with the white T-shirt on. I don't know if the second mic can find its way over there. Go ahead.
Hi, I recently lost my partner, so I'm reduced to one salary, and I've started drawing down on a private pension. I'm not old enough yet for state pension. I have a financial manager who's managing my pension, and I did say to him, can I green my pension? He said, oh, you'll get a bad return, and then I felt frightened, so I haven't done anything since. What should I do?
Okay, yeah, thank you very much. So what was your name?
Gillian.
And then over here, yeah.
You mentioned trying to get the government to take responsibility in terms of the climate change stuff, which sounds difficult enough. But when it comes to the arms trade, the government loves the arms trade. So how do we deal with pensions being invested in that?
Again, so what was your name, sorry?
Felicity.
Felicity, thanks. Great questions from Debbie, Stephen, Gillian and Felicity. Andrew, can I come to you first? Because one was directed straight at you about what happens to the things that get disinvested from.
So yeah, I'm not gonna sort of try and evade that question. Yeah, of course, speculators. That's effectively what they gradually become, because they're not taking the longer risk, and they increasingly will just kind of make those investments more and more volatile, and also make them sort of inappropriate for pensions to invest in. But I just want to iterate sort of like some of the other reasons why it's not a good idea to be invested in them, because they perform badly is one reason. Another is the risk that they will become stranded assets, and also the sort of the original and the still really important reason for the whole divestment movement is basically to create a movement in which, similar to the in divestment in South Africa during apartheid, is basically to create an environment where the fossil fuel industry do not have a social license. That is clear that through divestment, that if the sort of general populace, rather than a few sort of greedy speculators, are not interested in the fossil fuel industry anymore, then that changes the whole environment politically for the fossil fuel industry. And that's one of the key reasons why I think we need to address sort of fossil fuels as a sector.
And does that apply to arms as well? There was an arms question. Do you have a...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I'll be honest, I have not thought about the whole kind of systematic risk that arms, but there is a general recognition within some act of it, in the whole kind of this whole concept of ESG, environment, social and governance considerations in investment, and there is an element of that which is addressing human rights, and it seems to me that it seems a bit weird to kind of address human rights but also not address arms at the same time.
Thank you. Phoebe, do you want to pick any of those that you feel you want to answer?
Yeah, I'll jump in on the young people question, which is a surprise to nobody. So you're asking about kind of being self-employed and how you start going about making decisions for your pension when you're self-employed. The reality of it is that activism takes time, and therefore research takes time. But you need someone to tell you where to go first, otherwise you're wandering around Google aimlessly for a while. So my kind of advice for looking at pensions when you're setting yourself up is there's a variety of resources out there that can help. I've been working with the Student Christian Movement, joined together with the Just Money Movement, to make a resource about ethical pensions. If you go onto the SCM website, which is movement.org.uk, and go under campaigns, you'll find this resource. I did it on Canva. It's beautiful. And when I first started making this resource on Canva, I Googled the pictures. I don't know if any of you use Canva, Canva fans in the room. And you can Google, like, you can search the pictures on the side. And I searched pensions, and loads of pictures came up of old people and pots of money and stuff like that. I decided, no, that's not the vibe. We need activists, and we need that to be what we're looking for. And so if you go through that resource, it will help you, it will point you into a number of places to go to find information about where to look for information on ethical pensions. A couple good places to start would be the Just Money Movement. They're brilliant. The Ethical Consumer Guide also gives a lot of information about pensions and kind of the ones that you want to organise yourself. But don't shy away from the fact that it will take time to research. And I find that activism that sat in your bedroom on a laptop is just as valid as marching through the streets. So doing that research is so, so important. And reward yourself at the end. Buy a chocolate bar or something. Yeah. Tony's Chocolonely, whatever floats your boat.
Thanks so much, Phoebe. And Gillian, maybe you can ask the remaining question about investments. Tessa, Gillian's question about investments.
Oh, yeah. Where's Gillian? So immediately two caveats. I'm not a financial advisor, so like the, whatever you see on the back of a cigarette packet, you know, don't do this or don't. But I'd like to make some general comments, and I think it was something I referred to in my introductory comments is pensions. You're in it for the long term, but a lot of the financial markets are driven in a very short term fashion. So fund managers are often driven on quarterly returns, which is every 3 months. And as we all know, there's huge cycles in the stock market, and especially oil and gas. Stocks are known to be particularly volatile on occasion. So not to take debate with your advisor, I think it depends on what time frame they're looking at, what kind of funds you're looking at. It's, you know, how long is a piece of string. And again, not to blow CCLA's trumpet, but over, you know, the 10-year period, our funds do perform particularly well, and we don't invest in any companies that have more than 10% of revenue from oil and gas companies. So, yeah, I would say over what time period, and think for your pension, you're in for the long term, you're in for a stable financial returns and a stable environment to live in. So sort of living with your conscience as well, but knowing that your funds are properly looked after.
Thanks so much, Tessa. And maybe I'll just add a couple of things before I come back to you. So on the self-employed question, so the government, when they launched their commission, released some new research that shows that 45% of people, working people, are not putting anything into their pensions at the moment. So despite automatic enrollment, we think everybody has a pension, everybody's contributing to it. A large proportion of the country who have low incomes are not doing that. A lot of those are self-employed people, and most of those are women. So the system is really not set up to help self-employed people have pensions, and that's why we have to get the government to fix that system. It's not down to all of us to try to save enough for our pensions on its own. It's also down to the government to make it possible for that to happen. And the same is true of how do we divest from fossil fuels, from arms companies, and so on. And so we have this amendment that we're working with the Better Pensions Coalition, which is trade unions and civil society groups, to get into the current pension schemes bill, which would set up an exclusion list of things that pension funds are not allowed to invest in. And that would be a world first. And we can start, as Andrew said, with thermal coal, but over time we should be adding more and more fossil fuels and other destructive activities to that, because otherwise we'll just have a system where the good pension funds have stopped doing that investment, but plenty of them will still do it, and plenty of other investors will still do it. So if we don't get the government to say these things are off limits, then I don't think we can win that battle in the long term. Thank you. Abusing chair's privilege roundly there. So I'll take two more over here and then two more over there. Are the microphones ready? Let's find over here first. I think there's a gentleman here who, actually there's two here who had their hands up for a while, so let's take those two. And then over here, I can see a woman in a white top. Is that? Yeah, at the back there. And this gentleman down here smiling furiously at me.
Hi, my name's Martin. I just want to ask, I know you've given some good tips, especially yourself, Phoebe, about Liverpool Council. That's brilliant. I live there. I'll get onto that. But that's my point. I can complain to people like Liverpool Council, etc., but it's my employer who decides where my pension goes. And I've got control over the percentage I put in. I can even say high risk, or high risk, low risk, etc. But that's it. My employer even recently just switched fund managers. Again, nothing I could do about that. So, and I'm not going to complain to my manager, my company, my employer, time and again. I might do it once, but I can't do it continually because guess what? I won't be an employee anymore, you know, and that's must be something that worries people. So where do you go with that? Because ultimately, there's only very little I can do. It's my employer who's in control here, and they're the ones that need to be targeted to say, how do we put pressure on them without losing my job, without feeling like I'm a troublemaker?
Thanks very much. So what's your name?
Martin.
Martin. Thanks, Martin. Yeah, let's take the one straight behind because that's easy. Sorry, I messed that up by not switching the mics. There we go, we're back.
Hello, I'm Neil. Phoebe's worried about 0.8% of Liverpool City Council, and yet CCLA are saying it's okay to have 10% in oil and gas. So the question is, is it possible to be ever truly ethical? Or to put it another way, I would not personally hold shares in British and American Tobacco, but I have held shares in Morrison supermarkets and therefore made a small amount of money from their tobacco sales.
Okay, thank you very much. That's a great one about ethical investment. At the back.
It's Amy. Oh, hello, my name's Amy, and I was part of a campaign group at my college to encourage them to change to ethical banks. And luckily we succeeded. But as soon as we asked about their pensions, we talked to the lady at HR, and she's like, oh no, we can't do that. You can't talk anything about that. So what do we do about education systems? They're like, oh, well, somebody else controls that. It's not our problem. And even though the pension fund did have sustainable commitments, they're only for 2050. And by that point, so many low-lying islands would already be uninhabitable, and it's just too late.
Great question. Thanks, Amy. And then the final question is down here.
It seems to me that what you've all done is provided excellent arguments for taking pensions out of the private sector altogether and stopping us all relying on having a personal possession of ours, which we invest in the most exploitative way possible to generate the best pension we can get, and move instead to a system where we collectively think about everybody's pension interests and not just our own.
Great question. So what's your name?
Chris.
Chris, thanks, Chris. Great questions. Phoebe, I'm going to start with you. Which one would you like to answer? I think I know, but...
I'll start with Martin's question, if you don't mind, which was about how do you cause a stir without being called a troublemaker or fired. And it's a really valid question, and it's really important. I have what I like to call the Nando's chili of how involved in an activism thing you can be. And so mobilizing your workplace to ask your employer to change their pension provider is up there at the hot end of the Nando's chili. That's the black sauce that I don't go near. And so when I think about it that way, I think, okay, but there are other sources that I can try. So if that one is too hard for you and you're too worried about the repercussions and the consequences of that, look down the chili and what could be a lemon and herb version of that. And so in some pension providers that are private, you can look and you can choose the funds that you would like your money to go to. It varies provider on provider. Some pension providers, such as Nest, you can choose just to have all your funds go into ethical areas. Others, like Aviva, you really have to manage your funds yourself, which can be scary. So there is that option, which I would consider more of a lemon and herb. If you're going up onto kind of piri-piri, then you can also opt out of your pension. So in the UK, it's not an opt-in system. You're in until you say you're out. You can opt out and you can choose your own. I say that's piri-piri because it's the next one up. It's the same issues that we were mentioning when we were talking about the self-employed pension provider. So none of these answers are going to say, these are not going to get you fired. But what they are, they're giving you other options to make a difference. If all of that is still worrying you about causing a stir in your workplace, you can look broader. Like with the change in the bill at the moment, you can think maybe causing a stir in my small community is actually going to be too difficult for me personally. And then you can look wider and think, can I make a difference nationally or with my council? If you do, I would send you to the Just Money stand. You can sign their petition about making greener, fairer pensions through the government. And yeah, I'd say that's probably you're sitting on the plain and the mild side of the chili. But I sympathise, and it is particularly if you're working with small companies, it can be really hard to make a stir. So it's just looking at it and thinking, maybe that's not a step I can take right now. But ask around other employees. Maybe there are others that are feeling the same, and therefore you can mobilise more and more and get further up that chili when you're comfortable.
Thanks, Phoebe. Great answer. Andrew, sorry, do you want to go next, Tessa, and then I'll come to Andrew?
Yeah, I just...
Or Andrew, go ahead.
I just wanted, and I'm not going... just a couple of points about... one about opting out. Please, if you are thinking about doing that, please take advice about that, because often if you do that, you lose your employer's contribution, which can be quite significant, and that's not something to be sort of glossed over. The other thing I would say, though, is, and I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert on it, but I think the way these pensions should be organised with employers is that the trustees who manage the pension scheme should be independent of the management of your company. So the line of control should be independent. But yeah, you're shaking your head.
Thanks, Andrew. And Tessa?
Was it Neil who asked the question about CCLA? So it reminds me, I'm in my third year at CCLA, and I was in my first year when I was there, and I was on Teams call with somebody, and I said, oh yes, CCLA doesn't invest in oil and gas companies. And I could feel my colleague quivering. He was like, you can't say that, because what is an oil and gas company? So is Tesco's an oil, or is it a supermarket an oil and gas company? Because it sells petrol. So that's why we do those sort of revenue limits, because it extends down the chain. How far do you say companies have involvement in oil and gas? But the end result of that is we don't, at the moment, have any oil and gas companies, any utilities, or, you know, a lot of companies of that nature. But I just want to clarify a bit more. So just screening out those companies, what changes are that going to make? Having a low carbon portfolio in a high carbon world isn't going to make any difference. So my role at CCLA, and maybe explaining that could be a good example of what you can ask for at other fund managers, is once we've decided what's a good financial bet that we want to invest in, that not only has to cross that hurdle, but also we look at how they're aligned with the goals of the Paris Agreement. Then, when we have the good financial bets, so we're still getting our good returns, then my role, we have roughly 150 companies in our portfolio, is engaging. So we engage with all of them, and we focus and have meetings with high carbon companies and really drill down on saying, what is your carbon transition plan? How are you expecting to decarbonize your business? And really have some rigor around that. It's not tea and biscuits or tea and cake,
coffee and cake, whatever they call it. You know, we have metrics that we measure it and we hold them to account. We meet them regularly. And you really get a sense when you're meeting with the senior people of the business how serious that's been taken. And I think that's really where, you know, you can deal with your oil and gas and high carbon companies, but that's only a proportion of your portfolio. You really need to be, it's a systemic issue. You need to be moving all the companies, all the assets that you're invested in.
Thanks so much, Tessa. And the systemic point's really important. And maybe I can pick up the collective pensions point, which I completely agree with. So the government has said they want to have tackle pensions inequality and make sure everybody has a decent income in retirement. And the current system is highly individualized and therefore cannot deliver that outcome. It will mean that inequality in pension wealth and pension incomes will get worse. And unless we change that, for example, by having collective pensions as the norm rather than individualized pensions, which they do in other countries, and also by making sure that the contribution system is progressive rather than regressive. So at the moment, we spend about £50 billion a year in tax rebates for pension savings, and most of that goes to higher income earners, which is, I think, absolutely outrageous. So we've got a big fight on our hands to get the government to actually do what it says and make the system fair and get everybody a decent pension. And then on Amy's point about the raising standards for the long term, and again, I think this is where we really need the government to act. So in the pension schemes bill, which is in front of Parliament at the moment, there is a reserve power for the government to force pension funds to invest more if they don't meet their voluntary targets. And their voluntary targets are currently about investment in private equity, not investment in our future or investment in things that are good. So there's no reason why the government can't be more proactive in pushing pension funds to do more. And there's no reason actually why they can't tilt the rules of the game quite significantly to push pension investments where we need it to do. But that requires us to put pressure on them to make that a priority. So we've got 8 minutes left. So I think there's maybe two more questions and final comments from the panel and then a rousing finale. Question from over here. It's going to be check shirt over there and pink shirt down here. Sorry for everyone who's had their hands up and feels like I've not, but you can come to us at the end and ask us your questions. Yes.
Hello, it's Andrew here. I've sat on various investment boards over the years and was told that it's important to invest in fossil companies because actually that's the way that we had leverage and change to make things happen about disinvesting, about changing their policies. BP was always held up as the model example for that. We see what's happened to BP today, not beyond petroleum. Any advice about actually how people in my situation can really make a difference about how we can be working for better investments in the companies that we actually have some influence and agency over?
Thanks, Andrew. Great question. Down at the front here as well, whoever's got the second mic.
Thanks. With the government push for more investment in private equity, will it make this more difficult to regulate and never ever take the piri-piri option? Ever.
Sorry, what was your name?
Susan.
Susan, thanks Susan, great question. Okay, panel, I'm gonna start with Tessa Ringo this way. You can answer the questions, you can say any final things you want to say. Take it away, Tessa.
Okay, I think I'll tackle the influence and agency problem that Andrew asked, and I share your frustration. Prior to CCLA, I worked with the Local Authority Pension Fund Forum for 27 years, and we engaged closely with BP and Shell, and obviously frustration with the position where we are now. So I don't have an answer to that, but what I would say is, sometimes focus on what you can change. And as I say, we try and get companies across our portfolios to implement really rigorous climate transition plans, hold them to account for that, ask them what capex, what capital expenditure they're putting towards their technology to decarbonize. Is it embedded in their business strategy? How do they govern it? And there's lots of guidance around this. And I suppose if this is my chance, the last comment, there's a
I hesitate to call it a campaign, but something we've been working on, CCLA, with the Local Authority Pension Fund, and we're going into our fifth year, which is asking listed companies, as a matter of course, to put their climate transition plans to shareholders at the AGM. So shareholders get a chance not only to say, is it good or bad? And I have to say, you know, the majority of them get voted in the 90%. So even a bad transition plan may get voted in. And as we've seen, Shell and BP have drawn back on their plans. But what I think is great about it, it gives the opportunity for it to be a discussion point at the AGM, for these issues to be discussed, for the companies to disclose what they're doing, for shareholders to be able to hold them to account. So we initially wrote to the FTSE All Share. We're now focusing on the FTSE 100. When we first started in 2021, Unilever, we were engaging with the first FTSE 100 company to do so. Now a fifth of the FTSE 100 have put their climate transition plans to shareholders. And I think it's a vital sort of transparency element. If any of you have any dealings with fund managers, please ask them to support this initiative. I think it's a systemic way of addressing a systemic issue. Often shareholder resolutions will pick on one company. BP and Shell have been subject to many shareholder resolutions. We're saying across the board, the companies should be putting these issues on their AGM agenda. Shareholders should discuss them. Proper money should be put towards decarbonising the business and you know, take views of shareholders on that.
Thanks so much, Tessa. Andrew?
I'd like to address the fossil fuel question that Andrew raised. I think it's the first point to make about the fossil fuel industry is they've blown it because they made promises which they broke. So therefore, any kind of promise they make ongoing about what they're going to do is kind of, you know, not part of the debate anymore. And secondly, I think, you know, from an investment point of view, they're junk because if you look at their past performance, it's not particularly good relative to the rest of the market. And it's quite clear that the only profits, they only really become profitable when there's geopolitical instability, and that kind of like, it's just like ridiculous. I mean, it makes them incredibly risky investments to get into. And the most important one is to reiterate the systematic risks that they generate. They are destroying the rest of the portfolio, their investment. Anything that is kind of that, they are the locus of what's generating climate change. So they need to be outside the portfolio because otherwise they're destroying the value of the rest of it.
Great point. Thanks, Andrea. Phoebe.
Yes, just to pick up on the don't do the peri-peri, just to clarify, not a financial advisor. The day you come to me for financial advice is a dark day. What I was saying there was that a better understanding and looking at the broad options gives you an agency to be able to make those decisions yourself. Before you make any changes, of course, you have to seek financial advice, like my friend said. But it's spending that time researching and knowing that other options are out there. Like I said earlier, and like I'll wrap up what I've been saying on, research is one of the most powerful tools of activism, and it's one that should never be forgotten about, and one that we should always, always strive to do. And so that's where I'll finish.
Thanks so much, Phoebe. Because our panel has been so succinct and because I misread my watch, we actually do have a bit more time. So if you feel in particular you've been mistreated by me because I didn't pick you and you've had your hand up forever, stick both your hands up, wave them around. Okay, so people over
Come
here.
Over this side, yeah.
Okay, do you want to pick someone over there who... Yes, the crowd has chosen... Fantastic. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me? Yeah, yeah. Cool. I'm actually a fund manager, so you probably all hate me now. The issue I have is actually on the quality of the data that comes across my desk in terms of, I think the auditors themselves have a position to play in keeping things held to account. I don't know what the panel's view is on that. And the second question, as far as I'm aware, there's no global standards for, environmental and social and governance.
Thanks. So what was your name?
Sorry, Jason.
Jason, great. Well, that worked quite well with the crowd electing their spokesperson. So let's, the crowd over here can elect someone and the crowd over there can elect someone. Who is it? Who is it? This person here, yes.
Hi, I'm Pete. I do express an interest in that I'm both a trustee and a scheme manager. I'd just very quickly make a point to all the people who are talking about what their employees offer. Research it. They probably offer some really good ethical options. But the question I would have for the panel is, have we got the language lot wrong? We talk about ethical and ESG, which is quite frankly, it's rubbish, quite frankly. Because that makes it too easy to compartmentalise us. The nutters who talk about that stuff, shouldn't the language we're using be focused on long-term investment, long-term risk? We look at actuarial projections that go out 80 years and investments that go out a year. It's a complete mismatch. Long-term investment.
Great point. So what was your name? Pete. Thanks, Pete. So crowd over here, are you ready to elect your final questioner? Do you have a final questioner? No. Someone over here has been elected in a very dubious electoral process.
Thank you. Unexpected election. I work for a financial advisor and work in this area. I would really distrust some of what financial advisors tell you on this subject because not all of them know their stuff. So just a little warning. I would suggest to everyone just a point. Asking the right question is really important. It's not actually that hard to build a pension that excludes the bad guys. What is much harder is to hold the rest of them to account, because what we need is the majority of companies to transition. We accept the oil and gas companies aren't going to do that, but a lot of them can if the right pressure is applied. And so the question I would suggest people ask is, what is this asset manager or pension fund actually doing to hold those guys to account? Are they going to the AGMs? This is Tessa's expertise. You know, what are they doing in meetings mid-year with those companies? And using your power as shareholders, as owners of these companies, to represent your views to those people in power. I would also, and if you want to research that, one place I would, Tessa, you may have recommendations. There's a charity called Share Action. They publish some excellent reports. One is called Voting Matters. Voting Matters report and the Point of No Returns report, which is research on that question of what are they doing to hold them to account. Tessa, maybe you have other recommendations. I also think we have to recognise there's kind of a limit, and this is my question, there is a limit even to what asset managers can do to hold those companies to account. And I'm increasingly concluding we do need regulation, we do need legislation to change the rules of the game for these big multinationals. And we need to get the directors of those companies much more scared about being sued for breaching their risk duty about long-term thinking. And I'd be interested in the panel's thoughts on that.
Great, thanks. What was your name, sorry?
Steve Waters.
Thanks, Steve. Great, and notice how all the finance experts came out at the end there. hiding until the last moment, but great questions. Let's go this way around. So Phoebe, if you want to start, answer the question, say anything else you want to say. This genuinely is your final chance to speak.
It feels weird because I wrapped up and now I'm unwrapping. I'm just going to jump really quickly, actually. It's not necessarily a question, but you mentioned Share Action. And one of the things that a lot of people can struggle with is knowing how to ask people questions and knowing where to go. And what Share Action does is they do training for activists to attend AGMs of big companies. So I'd recommend looking into their work. I've also just published a resource with the Student Christian Movement titled Asking Important People Difficult Questions. And in that resource, it lists all the different ways you can contact people, including attending AGMs and stuff like that. So if you're struggling to find a difference through emailing or through signing petitions, take a look at that resource and really expand the ways that you can ask all of those questions. Sorry, I didn't actually answer any of your questions, but I heard that and I thought I should just give that a shout out.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Phoebe. Andrew.
Yeah. Since this is my summing up, I just wanted to, before I answer the questions, just make a point about this Institute of Actuaries report. I think we mentioned it earlier, but I just want to reiterate it just so it's on people's mind. So basically, the Institute of Actuaries are basically people who care about long-term risk. And they've done research with Exeter University, and their research shows that in sort of plausible scenarios of inaction, the global economy between, I think it's 2070 and 2090, will fall by 50%. Now, let's be clear about this. That means that pensions are over. They will not make that transition. Anybody who had a pension in that era, that's it. It's game over. Right? So this is really important. Okay? It's not, you know, if you're a young person, either your pension will be affected or your offspring's pensions will be affected. So let's, you know, it's important. So the address, I totally agree with Peter about the long term, and I think the language is important. I think you don't need to be talking to them, you know, talking to them about ethical investment kind of just confuses the issue. It's better just to focus on, right, we want you to do your job, we want you to take the systematic risk properly, we want you to invest for the long term. I can't really comment, a little comment on the quality of data. I think, there's a lot, I get the impression from my sort of meager experience, but it's that there are a lot of benchmarks. But I would say that the European community have done an awful lot of trying to focus on getting standardization across, and maybe the industry should start sort of coalescing around those. Particularly there's some that Oxfordshire are using for some of their investments. And about the financial advice, I think it's important. I would agree with that. I think you need to ask your financial advisor really hard questions about whether what they're doing and what, you know, be clear about what you want them to do, what your risk, what risk you are prepared to take, and also what you want, and also shop around. Ask other people what financial advisor you're using, because I think the impression I'm getting looking at what my friends have. You know, recently I had a look at a friend's portfolio, and there was a lot of stuff in there. I was like, this isn't performing. I don't really understand what that's there for. You know, I think it's important. If you do have a private, do actually lift the lid on it. Have a look at the funds that is being, and ask hard questions.
Thanks very much, Andrew. And Tessa?
Very conscious of time, so I'll try and rattle off two quick answers. Firstly, to Jason on data. Yes, I agree. It can be giga, can't it? Garbage in, garbage out. You know, we struggle with some of them, and we've already raised, you know, some of the scenarios are really, how can they be fit for purpose? On global standards, the UK had something called the Transition Plan Task Force, and that was considered the gold standard for guidance on what companies should do on transition plans. It's now embedded in the International Sustainability Standards Board, the IFRS. So there are too many acronyms anyway, my understanding is the Pensions Review is looking at embedding in that. So it's more than previous guidance. It really says what's the quality of a good climate transition plan. And finally, to Steve, yes, going to AGMs. And I'd say also, you're speaking to the directors who are really setting the strategy for the company. It should be embedded in the business strategy. We try and have consistency of engagement. So it's not, you know, one-off flurry of activism. It's going again and again. We try and build up good engagement with them. National Grid, for one, as an example of an AGM we went to, and they finally did put a transition plan to vote. So persistence, I think.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tessa. And I would say, in response to a few of the questions, so one thing we do at Finance Innovation Lab is track all of the reforms to regulation legislation in the financial sector. And there are over 100 reform processes going on at the moment. We're in the middle of, post-Brexit, a massive change in the rules of the game. So we've got the biggest pensions review for 20 years. We've also got standards for ESG. They're being set at the moment. We've got transition plans were mentioned. The government's got a consultation on what the standards should be for those and how they should be measured. So there's a huge amount that we need to do to get the government to take its responsibility to regulate the financial system so that it delivers for the things that we care about, our future and the climate. So I think that's absolutely central. So it's been a great pleasure to talk to you all about this amazingly important topic, and to have such a really great active audience and some democracy and some excitement at the end. I'll just finish by saying, reiterating what Tessa said earlier. So, you know, this is a kind of democracy we live in. So we should be putting pressure on our government to take our concerns seriously, to integrate the environment into the pensions reform, to make sure it delivers a decent pension system that works for everybody, and that you can get involved. You can do all the things Tessa said. You can write to your MP, raise up to in your local papers and your local radio shows, do all the things I'm sure that you already know how to do. But there's also a loose coalition called the Better Pensions Coalition with many active members, including there's a petition you can sign on 350.org. Divest UK has actions you can take, and Just Money Movement have a stall over there. They're very active and also have a pensions petition and work you can get involved in. So please take this away and let's see if we can make change happen together. And so, having been wildly early, I'm now wildly late. But it just remains for me to thank our panel. Let's have it for our panel. You've been fantastic today. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.